Hello and welcome to the Seattle Named London Theatre Podcast for the 14th of August 2016. My name's T.R.P. Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James and Phil from West End Whingers. We're now going to talk about Yerma at the Young Vic Theatre. This is written by Simon Stone after Federico Garcia Lorca, which basically means it's a very free adaptation of Lorca's play. It's also directed by Simon Stone, with a design by Lizzie Clacken. Simon Stone has used a trick like this before. Basically, he's got a traverse stage and enclosed the action in a Perspex box, with monitors announcing scene and time changes. Stone used this before in his free adaptation of Ibsen's Wild Duck in 2014, which was on at the Barbican. This production stars Billy Piper as Yerma, Brendan Cowell as her husband, John McMillan as a former boyfriend, Felicia Texiera as her assistant, Maureen Beattie as her mother, and Charlotte Randall as her sister. Gareth, tell me more about this production and what you thought of it.
Well, Lorca's play, which is, 80 or 90 years old now, is about a woman called Yerma who is trying very hard to have children. But the focus of the play, and the name Yerma, by the way, means barren, the focus of Lorca's original play is about the kind of external and social pressure. So it has a sort of cast of characters who are kind of commenting on the fact that she hasn't produced any children. And what Simon Stone has done, and he has built it as after Lorca, so it's his play. It's fundamentally different from Lorca, yet there is a kind of essence of Lorca in it. Is he's made it much more about the internal or personal pressure of being unable to have children, and in a very contemporary way. So it's set in the present day, and the couple, she's not called Yerma now, she's called Her. She doesn't have a name. I think she's a kind of every woman. Her and her husband both have important careers. They live in sort of cool parts of London, and the play starts with sort of quite lightly, you know, kind of in some ways taking the mickey out of the sort of modern metropolitan lifestyle and all the sort of things that go with it. But quite quickly, it becomes very, very dramatic as the pressure gets more and more, and she's trying harder and harder and failing to have a child. And in this contemporary setting, that kind of journey means she's kind of calculating ovulations, she's going for fertility testing, they're both going for fertility testing, and indeed they end up having quite a lot of IVF. Whilst all this is happening, we also meet her mother, who clearly wasn't particularly great at motherhood. She's a very cold kind of character. And we also meet her sister, who's got a fairly loveless marriage, but yet manages to produce a child very easily. And neither her sister or her mother appear to have much motherly instinct. And yet, in one scene when Her is with her nephew, she clearly has. She clearly has a very natural kind of instinct. So what starts in a kind of light way really does, you know, her mental health declines dramatically. And ultimately, you know, there are destroyed relationships and destroyed careers. And it really becomes very harrowing. Her ex, Victor, kind of comes on the scene. He's been hired to work for the same company, and she ends up as his boss. And he kind of becomes more than just her ex who's working for her. And she's got a very young female assistant who's kind of encouraging her to put a lot of this out into the open. And so she's got a blog, and she publishes quite a lot about what she's going through on her blog, which doesn't go down terribly well with everybody. So it's lots of short scenes. There's music in between, which kind of keeps the tension going. Her life is laid bare, really, over 3 or 4 years whilst all this is happening. And it's a very voyeuristic experience because of the setting inside a Perspex case. The actors are mic'd, so we hear them very clearly. The number of short scenes does occasionally get a little bit irritating, but the tension is maintained by this use of music, and the music changes over time as well, which I thought was actually very clever. So we don't have any of the characters in Lorca's play, the kind of chorus-type characters. We just have the mother, the sister, the assistant, and the ex, as well as obviously the husband. I thought it was just stunning. I just thought it was just completely riveting from beginning to end. And a lot of that's got to do with the most extraordinary performance by Billy Piper. I mean, I've seen all of her recent stage performances and enjoyed them very much and admired them very much. But this is on another level altogether. It's completely natural, it's simply stunning, and she just gives it everything. I've rarely, in my theatre-going career, I've rarely seen anything quite like it, really. Brendan Cowell, an Australian actor who I don't think has been here apart from The Wild Duck, and is not really entirely a stage actor. He's obviously had lots of film and TV work as well. He's got great chemistry with her. And even though at first you look at the age difference and so on, and you wonder why they're a couple, but they act a very believable couple. Maureen Beattie is this kind of cold, ice-cold mother. Charlotte Randall, always good, is, you know, got quite a complex character here as the sister Mary. And then two great sporting performances from John McMillan and Thalisa Teixeira, I think it's called. So all of the acting is great, but Billy Piper's performance is just one of those things you see rarely in a lifetime, to be honest. And in the Young Vic's own achievements over recent years, and there have been many, many of them, this is, you know, even when measured against that, this is something very, very special indeed. And I think it's the sort of thing, you know, we'll be talking about in years to come, really. We haven't seen any of Simon Stone's work here apart from The Wild Duck. He's worked an awful lot in mainland Europe and obviously in his home country in Australia. I was lucky enough to see his Medea in Amsterdam when he's done quite a bit of work with the Tonnerre Group with Ivo van Hove's company, and you can kind of see the stylistic similarities between that company's work and his approach. And I really would love to see more of his work here because I think it's a really brilliant production and a great adaptation, and I can't recommend it enough. So I don't know, that's me. What do you think, Tim?
I have to say I agree. Billy Piper, I get slightly put off her because there's all this tabloid baggage that seems to come around her. It's not her fault, but you know, there's always been this thing about boyfriends and husbands and all that stuff. It always seems to surround her. And actually, she is a superb actress, and you see it in this. And I was watching it and just thinking, how good is this person? I mean, she is just so good in this. And I mean, the rest of the cast are very good as well, but I mean, it is something that she makes really special. I have to say, I didn't, because of this tabloid baggage that she seems to have to drag around, I wasn't really keen on seeing this, but once it started and got into it, it was just, yes, carried you along, and it was really, really good. I mean, it is, what, 90 minutes long? You know, it isn't Lorca, it is definitely after Lorca, it's definitely an adaptation. So to expect it to have any of Lorca's settings or the Lorca's intentions, I think, is a little bit mistaken. I won't mention which reviewer I'm talking about. But overall, it's a very clever retelling of the story and very fine updating. I mean, the way that they've updated the story and made you believe every step of the way is very impressive. I mean, okay, the whole blog stuff might be a bit old and not really make any sense to somebody who's technical like me, but it's fine for people to use that, I suppose. But yeah, overall, I mean, it is a very, very good production. We're now going to talk about Jesus Christ Superstar at the Open Air Theatre in Regent's Park. This, of course, is Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical from... The concept album was made in 1970. The first production on Broadway was 1971, and it opened in London in 1972. It wasn't all that successful on Broadway, but it ran for 8 years in the West End, which was something of a record, which was subsequently beaten by other shows, mostly other shows by Andrew Lloyd Webber, but sometimes he did collaborate with Tim Rice, certainly on something like Evita. It was revived at Lyceum in 1996, and then there was a tour in 2004. According to this, it says that James Fox was Judas, which is an interesting idea. And then there was a competition about 4 years ago, an ITV competition called Superstar, which Andrew Lloyd Webber was producing, and the UK public chose Ben Foster to play Jesus for an arena tour, which took place in 2012 and 2013. That production had Tim Minchin as Judas, Mel C from the Spice Girls as Mary Magdalene, and Chris Moyles as King Herod. It's rather an interesting idea. I always get this confused a little bit. Well, I don't get it confused musically. I know the album quite well, having listened to it on car journeys when I was a very small child. I think one or both of my parents were rather into it. They certainly took up with the Vita the moment it came out as well. But I always get this a little bit muddled up, but the surprise that you have Godspell, which came out about a year later, and it's a slightly different concept. I mean, in Godspell, you've got 10 actors on stage at all times, and it's not quite the same show, but it's rather odd that you get these two shows coming in at the same time. I haven't been able to see if there was any major controversy about whether or not anyone was being accused of plagiarism, but of course, you know, anybody can adapt the same story. It's not exactly in copyright anymore. I have slightly fond memories, at least I know the songs very well, of Jesus Christ Superstar. This particular production at the Open Air Theatre in Regent's Park is directed by Timothy Sheeder, with design by Tom Scutt, choreographies Drew McConey, musical director Tom Deering, and stars Declan Bennett as Jesus, Tyrone Huntley as Judas, Anushka Lucas as Mary, Pilate is played by David Thaxton, Herod is played by Peter Caulfield, Caiaphas is played by Kevin Cornwall. Phil, you saw this with an understudy, didn't you? Billy Cullum as Jesus.
Yeah, and this was my second attempt to see it. As the night I went, they had a power failure, which is, you kind of expect to go to Regent's Park and maybe have rain or be rained off or something, but not a power failure. And it was probably the most perfect night of the year. It was really, really warm. The slight advantage of seeing it 3 weeks later was, of course, it gets darker slightly earlier, which adds to the atmosphere. And like you, I knew the album incredibly well. I recorded it off my next door neighbour's original album with a reel-to-reel tape recorder, so we all had to shut up for an hour and a half and played it endlessly. I typed out all the lyrics on my sister's typewriter and made a cover for it with felt-tip pens and bound it together with sellotape. So at one point, I probably knew every single lyric, and I know pretty much all of them now, and I know the music really well. And this is, for me, by far and away Andrew Lloyd Webber's best show. And I came up from school to see the original production I saw it in 73, but it was the original London cast with Paul Nicholas and Victor Spinetti as Herod and Elaine Page in the chorus, Floella Benjamin in the chorus, I believe. I absolutely loved it then. I saw the Lyceum production, absolutely loved that as well. I didn't see the stadium tour, although I had the chance to go, but got caught at work, so couldn't go to that, which I was sorry about. But I'm kind of pretty against the O2 because I don't think it would really work in there, but I still regret not seeing it because I love the music so much. This didn't disappoint at all. In fact, it's a shame there's sort of nobody else to bounce off against, because I'm just going to bung superlatives at it. I just, by the interval, we were both talking about going to see it again. That's how much I was enjoying this. I thought what was fantastic, and you often don't get in shows, and particularly because they're doing this outside, the sound balance was absolutely perfect. If I say I could hear every lyric, it might be helped by the fact that I know every lyric, but I really, really could hear every word. And there were moments where I had shivers going up my spine, from the overture. Declan Bennett was off, which was a slight disappointment, but I have to say Billy Cullum, who stepped in and apparently was his first performance understudying, really did a terrific job. He suffered absolutely fantastically. He has an awful lot of glitter thrown at him. I do feel sorry for the cast, because during the course of this run, they're never going to get rid of that glitter. You could see them glittering on them in the bar after the show. The 39 lashes scene is 39 glitter lashes. I won't say too much more than that, but there were some very, very nice touches. It's quite a po-faced kind of show in some ways, and yet there were quite a few touches of humour. Obviously, Herod's Son, which is done extremely camply by Peter Caulfield, who really camps it up, but also Caiaphas and his troops are sort of, there's quite a bit of wit in that staging, particularly from Sean Kingsley, who was really working the audience with his annas. Kevin Cornwall has the most incredible deep voice. It just sounds exactly as it does on the album. And I did hang around in the bar just trying to hear him say a few more words, because it's such an extraordinary voice he has. I thought Anushka Lucas, she had a very nice catch in her voice, which made her songs terrific. David Thaxton sort of began quite low-key as Pilot, but he really built on that and then just let rip. It was again, a moment which where I had shivers running up my spine. One thing that I wasn't sure about at first, it's done slightly sort of semi-concert staging in the sense that they're holding hand mics, which they don't really need because they've got head mics on as well. So I found those kind of slightly got in the way, but occasionally those were used. I won't say why, how they were used, but they were used quite wittily, which was, I thought, terrific. But the star of the show is Tyrone Huntley. I mean, everybody was good, but he was just absolutely terrific. And he looked so pained throughout. He sang absolutely fantastically. And, you know, at the standing ovation at the end, the biggest applause was for him. And it was sort of, it was quite a delight to see him smile because he really, really goes through it in this. He's going to get an Olivier nomination and I would say quite possibly win the Olivier Award next year. I wouldn't be surprised if this transferred, although Tyrone Huntley is going to Dreamgirls, which makes me even more excited about seeing Dreamgirls now. But I've really got to applaud them overall on the quality of the sound design, the musical director is Tom Deering, sound designer Nick Lidster. What a superb job they did. And having had, much as I loved Groundhog Day, but did have a problem hearing quite a lot of the ensemble lyrics, I really think that the people behind that should go and see this. You know, if I had the chance to go again, and I'm quite tempted to go and queue for sort of one of the grassy knoll seats before it ends, because it's even if it does transfer, you won't get the magic of seeing it in the park. I'm sorry, I can't sort of say any negatives about it. It's just a complete and utter thumbs up from me. And actually, all the people who were there that I knew the same night were loving it just as much and thinking, when can we go again? So it doesn't come much higher, praise doesn't come much higher than that, but it helps that I do love the album, and I'm not always Andrew Lloyd Webber's biggest fan, but this is the moment where I am.
I'm now going to talk about The Faith Healer, which has just closed at the Donmar Warehouse. This is Brian Friel's 1979 play about a travelling faith healer who travels throughout remote parts of the British Isles. It starred Stephen Delane as a faith healer of the title, Gina McKee as his long-term partner, Grace, and Ron Cook as Teddy, his agent. It was directed by Lindsay Turner with a design by Ez Devlin, who produced another one of this year's coup de théâtre, a curtain of water that hid the stage between scenes. I first saw this play back in 2001 in an Almeida production directed by Jonathan Kent. It was memorable for a couple of reasons. One was Ian McDermott's performance of Teddy, the variety agent with a long list of clients, of whom Frank is perhaps his most important. It's a peach of a part, a plum role, if you like, and Ian McDermott was very impressive, and indeed it won him a Critics Circle Theatre Award for Best Actor that year, and 5 years later, when he repeated the role on Broadway, he won a Tony Award for Best Featured Actor in a Play. The other memorable thing about that production is not quite so special. In fact, it's rather bad. Ken Stott, who played Frank, dried repeatedly on the night I saw it. Drying is something that, you know, really can't be helped. You can't really exactly blame the actor. It's just something that comes over you. But it always feels uncomfortable when you're watching it and you feel so bad about it. And not just because it spoils your appreciation of the performance, but you also feel very sorry for the actor because obviously they know that these terrible things are happening to them. That really rather spoiled my enjoyment of the play at the time. And I hope things are okay with Ken Stott. He's about to appear in The Dresser, and I'm hoping to see him later this year in that play when it comes into London. Historically, this play has had sometimes a mixed critical reaction. The 2001 play was generally well received, but earlier productions, both on Broadway, where it starred James Mason, and at the Royal Court, where I think Helen Mirren was in it, those productions got very mixed reviews, and people didn't really get on with this play. It has to be said that this particular production, this 2016 production, did have almost universally good reviews and was very well received by a lot of people, although some of the bloggers I know and some of the bloggers who I might otherwise have asked to talk about this play were, well, a little meh about this play. Everyone knows it's good. We have a very good cast and a very good production and direction. It's a decent enough play, but it sort of doesn't live in the mind as much as some other productions, and it really didn't catch light as much as it could. There's pure quality on stage, but it didn't really garner that much enthusiasm, I think, is the only word I can use. Now, the play is a series of four monologues. The opening and closing ones are done by Frank, the faith healer, with Grace and Teddy recounting their tales in between. They're basically telling a story of their travels, Frank's travels throughout the British Isles. He is an Irishman, and the final story, the final part of this play, or part of the stories, is about his last attempt to heal somebody in a small Irish village or town, and it doesn't end at all well. But we get lots of other places talked about. They often list these out-of-the-way places that you probably may not have ever heard of throughout Britain. There's a particular delight in the name of a town called Kinlochbervie, which is a Scottish town in the Highlands, and that's a place where something rather nasty happens in the relationship between Grace and Frank, and we're never entirely sure what happens in each of these towns, because nobody is completely telling the truth, although you do think that Teddy, who's this wonderful creation, and as I said, it's a very good, great part, and it's very well done in this by Ron Cook, you get the feeling that he perhaps is telling the closest version of the historical version of the story is the closest to the truth. But as well as this Kinlochbervie episode that is described by the actors, where Grace loses a child, we also get another major incident leading up to the final attempt to heal somebody, is a remarkable thing that happens in Wales, where Frank, knowing that he is probably a fraud, appears to heal an entire village hall full of sick people. And it is, you know, held up as a remarkable thing he does, although he always feels that he's making it up as he's going along. He is providing entertainment. It is a show. He's not really a real healer as such, but he is giving people hope in some ways. I think it's a good play, but it's just not one I could get excited about. It's a very good production, this. It was a very good production, but it just didn't live in the mind with a great enthusiasm. I've been wanting to talk about it for quite a long time, and we've kind of missed the boat because it's already over. And you can say that the critics all loved it because it is quality. I mean, you've got some good actors in there, you've got a very good part in Teddy, you've got everything going for it, but in a way, it's not the strongest play that Brian Friel wrote, and it just doesn't capture the imagination. You know, I got the feeling when reading back over the critics that they're talking about the quality of the play, just accepting that this is a great play, and I don't think this is a great enough play for people to really get excited about it. It is certainly a good play, but you know, you want excitement and you want enthusiasm when you watch plays, and I don't think we got that here, which is a great pity, really.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page at Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.